The first time he waits in the back lot, she thinks it is a mistake. The floodlights stop at the corner of the building. Beyond that line, the asphalt turns dark and soft at the edges. No cameras, no office windows facing out, only the white van, the chain-link fence, and the sound of his boots on gravel as he walks toward her. Alana keeps her keys between her fingers, tells herself he is just checking mileage. Instead, he steps into her space and calls her sweetheart, asks why she never answers his messages after hours. His breath smells of coffee gone old. His hand brushes her hip and lingers. He reminds her who writes the schedules, who decides who gets the overtime rotes, and who sits at home. When she pulls away, he laughs and tells her no one can see them here. Out front, the cameras blink red over the main lot. Back here, there is only his voice and her heartbeat, fast and loud in the dark. Chapter 1, Back Lot. Alana kills the engine and the van shudders into silence. The depot yard is half lit, half shadow. The row of cameras over the main lot glows with their tiny red eyes. Her spot is not in that row. Rick had called on the radio and told her to swing around to the back fence. She grabs her tool bag and steps down, legs stiff from the last job. It was a late service call in an old building with bad lighting and bad wiring. She still smells dust and burnt insulation. She shoulders the bag and hears the rear door of the depot slam somewhere out of sight. Brooks, his voice carries before she sees him. Hang on a second. Rick comes around the corner of the warehouse with his hands in his jacket pockets. He walks easy, like this is nothing different from any other end of shift check. He stops between her and the path back to the main lot. He looks her up and down like he is counting tools. Good numbers today, he says. You keep hitting those tickets like that, I can keep feeding you the good work. She shifts the bag to the other shoulder. I just want my routes posted straight, that's all. His eyes narrow a little. Relax, I am saying you're doing well. He steps closer. You know how many people want the overtime you just got. She can feel the fence at her back now. The van blocks one side, his body the other. The air smells of oil and wet concrete. We done here, boss? She asks. She keeps it flat. No challenge, no warmth. He reaches for the paper on his clipboard, then lets his hand fall against her hip instead. The touch is light, but it stays there too long. You never answer after hours, he says. I call, I text, nothing. You think that looks good when I'm trying to keep you on. Her fingers tighten on the strap of the tool bag. Work hours are work hours. You can email the schedule. He laughs. Out here, it does not work like that. You want the routes. You stay in touch. His hand presses a little more firmly before he finally steps back. No one can see us back here, kid. You fine. She walks around him without another word. Her heart bangs in her chest, but her face stays cold. Inside the depot, the fluorescent lights buzz and the time clock clicks. She punches out, drops the bag in her locker, and feels his eyes on her from the doorway. On the drive home, she does not turn on the radio. The road rolls past in long strips of yellow and black. She feels that touch on her hip again. She tells herself she is tired and overreacting. She also knows she moved her car to a camera spot for a reason that morning. The week had started with small things. Rick assigning himself to ride along on two of her jobs when he never bothered before, his knee pressing against hers in the cab as he pointed at maps on the tablet. A message late on Sunday night about a route change that ended with a smiley face she did not ask for. She had handled worse comments from customers on front steps, a stare that lingered, a joke that crossed a line, a hand that tried to slip cash into her pocket as an excuse to touch. This felt different. This man signed her timesheet. This man could write her up. The next morning, she waits by the route board. Marlon stands beside her, sipping coffee from a stained mug. He has 10 more years in the field and carries himself like nothing surprises him anymore. You good? He asks without looking up. You quiet. Can you swap that first ticket with me? She says. If Rick tags himself to my ride again, I am walking out. Marlon glances at her then. He sees something in her face that makes him put down the mug. He say something to you. She holds his look for a second. He is getting too friendly after hours. On the phone or in person. In the back lot, she says, the words feel heavy, no cameras. Marlon mutters a curse under his breath. You tell anyone. Tell them what, she says. He did not grab my throat. He put his hand where it did not belong and talked about my routes. That is enough, Marlon says. You know that is enough. She shrugs. You ever seen a complaint go well around here? He does not argue. The silence between them answers for him. The route board clicks as jobs update. Rick steps out of his office with a fresh stack of printouts. Brooks, he calls. You are with me first run, then you hit the east side alone. Alana feels the weight of every eye in the room. She feels Marlon's hand tighten around his mug. She forces her shoulders not to flinch. I would rather take a solo start, she says. My numbers are fine. Rick's smile does not reach his eyes. You are with me, he repeats. His tone leaves no space. We are checking on some things from last night. In the cab of the truck, he keeps the radio low and his voice lower. He asks about her weekend, about her boyfriend, about why she wears her uniform that fitted. Each question feels like a test. At a red light, he taps the steering wheel. You know, some of the guys think you only get these routes because you are close to me, he says. You would not want them thinking I am wasting my time, right? She stares at the traffic signal. I get the routes because I finish the jobs. He snorts. Sure, but I am the one who keeps your name at the top of the list. I would hate to see that change. That night, she sits at her kitchen table with the route sheets spread out. Her phone buzzes with another message from him. All work words at the top, a line at the bottom asking what she is doing right now. She does not answer. She deletes the thread, then stops and stares at her own thumb on the screen. She scrolls back and restores it instead. She reads each line and hears his voice in the back lot. Outside, a siren wails and fades. In the quiet that follows, she understands something simple. If she keeps pretending this is normal, the next time he corners her, there will be no doubt about what he thinks he can get away with. She cannot prove a hand on her hip in the dark. She cannot prove the way his body blocked the way out. All she has are words, and the way her stomach twisted when he laughed. She looks at her phone, then at her work bag by the door. Tomorrow she will still show up. The board will still light with routes. Rick will still hold the keys. For now, she does the one thing she can control. She sets a new unlock code on her phone and tests the voice recorder app. The screen glows in her palm as she hits record and hears her own breathing fill the room. She listens to that sound for a long time before she finally hits stop. She does not know yet that this small habit will become the only thing between the back lot and the inside of a conference room. She only knows she is tired of feeling trapped in places where the cameras stop. Chapter 2, The Edge of the Recording. Alana wakes before sunrise. The sky is still a dull gray, the kind that never gives anything away. She slips the phone into her pocket, checks the recorder once, and locks the door behind her. The walk to her van feels longer than usual. Every sound on the street hits sharper than it should. She tells herself to breathe and move and keep her head straight. At the depot, the air carries the mix of diesel, cold metal, and stale coffee. The route board flicks through updates as she steps inside. A few techs nod at her, but no one speaks much. The week has dragged the whole crew down. She scans the sheet and sees the change. Her name sits on a cluster of late shifts, all in neighborhoods known for broken infrastructure and long waits at the meter boxes. Rick is leaning near the copy machine, watching her without watching her. He walks over. Got some adjustments for you, he says. His tone is steady but thin. You can handle the East End. You work well under pressure. She feels the phone against her thigh. It is running. She keeps her voice level. These shifts are stacked. Everyone else rotated last week. Rick smiles like he is being patient. You want the work or not? She does not give him anything else. She grabs the printed sheet, folds it once, and heads for her van. She senses him behind her, but he does not follow outside. The cold hits her face as she climbs in. For a moment, she thinks about driving straight out the gate and not turning back. The thought dies when she remembers rent, bills, and the line on her contract about job abandonment. The morning routes go slow. She climbs poles, resets breakers, and deals with customers who want answers she cannot give. Every hour, she checks her phone to make sure the recording still runs. Around noon, she gets a message from HR. It is short. Stop by before end of day. Quick check-in. Her chest tightens. She answers with a simple yes. She imagines who said something. Maybe one of the junior techs noticed her face when Rick reassigned her. Maybe Marlon spoke up. Maybe the tension in the break room finally cracked through. She does not know if this is help or a warning. By 3 o'clock, she is back on the road heading toward the final job of the shift. A heavy rain cloud rolls in. She turns on the wipers and they drag across the glass with a slow scrape. She thinks about the back lot. She thinks about how quickly things can slide where no one is looking. When she returns to the depot, the lot glistens under the new rain. The main cameras blink through the drizzle. She pulls into a spot with a clear view of 3 lenses. She sits for a moment before stepping out. Her hands tremble once before she forces them still. The HR office sits off the main hallway past the time clock. The door stands half open. Inside, a plain table, 2 chairs, and a ticking wall clock. A woman named Hale, mid-40s, calm face, nods at her. Hale never raises her voice, never rushes. That scares Alana more than anything else. "Thanks for coming in," Hale says. "Close the door." Alana sits. The recorder in her pocket picks up the fabric creak of her chair. She wonders if this is allowed. She does not care. Hale folds her hands. "We noticed some friction on the route board change this week. I want to understand if there is a problem." Alana feels the urge to deny everything. Say she is fine, say she is just tired, but she sees Hale watching carefully, waiting to see what shape the truth might take. "Scheduling has been off," Alana says. "Extra late shifts, extra ride-alongs." Hale nods. "From whom?" "You know," Alana says. The words scrape out, "Rick." Hale pauses. "Is it performance-related?" "No." Another pause. "Is there something else going on?" The room feels small. The clock ticks louder, the air presses in. Alana tries to keep her voice steady. "He is making personal comments," she says, "during and after hours. He corners me sometimes, when no one is around." Hale does not move. "Has he touched you?" "Yes." The silence after that feels heavy enough to break something inside the walls. Hale exhales slowly. "Did anyone witness this?" "No." "Is there any proof?" Alana lifts her eyes. "Not for that first night." "But," she swallows, "I started recording my workdays." Hale leans back slightly. Her expression does not shift, but something in the air does. "Bring anything you think we should hear," Hale says. "We can schedule a formal conversation if needed. For now, this stays between us." Alana stands. Her legs shake. She does not know if she has made things better or worse. She heads back toward the lot, the floor cold under her boots. Rick is waiting by her van. He leans against the hood like he owns the metal under his elbow. Rain beads on his jacket. "You and HR talking about overtime?" he asks. His voice carries a sharp edge. "Or something else." She stops several feet away. "Back off." He steps toward her. "You think anyone buys your act? You think you can push me and walk away clean?" The phone catches everything. The breath in his words, the tremble under them, the moment he lowers his voice and steps too close. "You keep this up and watch what happens to your numbers," he says. "Watch how fast the good work dries up." Then he realizes there are techs in the distance. 2 guys rolling a cart across the pavement, talking loud. Rick steps back like nothing happened. "Be smart," he says, almost whispering. Then he walks off. Alana waits until he is far enough away before she gets in the van. She closes the door and sits there, shaking. The audio file runs. She plays back 10 seconds. His voice spills through the speaker, low and sharp, every threat clear. "It is not everything. It is not the back lot, but it is something." She closes the app and locks the phone. Rain runs down the windshield in thin rivers. She grips the wheel and breathes until her heartbeat slows. Everything is shifting now. She can feel it. The question is whether this recording saves her or destroys her. She does not know yet. She only knows she is done facing him alone. The night settles in. The depot lights flicker. She drives off with the sense that the next step cannot be avoided. The system is awake now, and so is he. Chapter 3, The Room with No Easy Exit. Alana wakes with a weight in her chest, the kind that does not fade with coffee or a long shower. Today is the day she steps into a room where the truth has to stand on its own. No shadows, no backlot, no guessing what he meant, just what happened and what she can prove. She drives in without music. The depot looks washed out in the early light. A few techs smoke near the fence. Marlon spots her and gives a small nod. She holds it and keeps walking. She cannot afford any eyes on her right now, not until this is done. HR sent a message the night before, 9 o'clock. Formal meeting, bring documentation, bring representation if needed. She printed the texts, even the ones that looked harmless on their own. She transferred the audio clip to a clean phone and labeled it with the date and time. She barely slept after that. The HR office door is closed when she arrives. Hale opens it a moment later and steps aside. Inside, a small table waits with two chairs on each side. The air smells like dry paper and old carpet. A union rep sits at her left. She does not know him well, but his presence steadies her. He nods once, slow and certain. Hale clears her throat. "We will review your statement and any supporting material," she says. "After that, we will meet with Mr. Dorsey alone." Alana unfolds the printed texts. Her hands stay steady even when her voice wants to shake. She lays out each piece, the late-night messages, the blurred line between work instructions and personal questions, the comments about her roots, the line where he asked why she ignored him after hours. Then she pulls out the phone. "This is from the second incident," she says. Hale nods, "Play it." Alana taps the screen. Rick's voice fills the room, thick and close. The anger in it is unmistakable. The threat inside the words is cold. When it ends, the union rep exhales through his nose. Hale sits still for several seconds. "Thank you," she says. "We will speak with Mr. Dorsey and call you back when we are ready." Alana and the rep step into the hallway. The door closes behind them. She leans against the wall, breath short. The hallway feels narrow, the lights too bright. The rep taps her arm once. "You did the right thing," he says quietly. She nods but does not trust her voice. The minutes crawl. The depot hums with movement outside the HR wing. She hears footsteps, muffled voices, doors opening and shutting, then silence. Rick finally emerges from the room. His face is pale under the warehouse lights. His jaw works like he is grinding something between his teeth. He does not look at her. He walks down the hall with stiff shoulders. Hale opens the door again. "Alana, come in." The rep follows her inside. The air feels heavier now. Hale folds her hands. "We reviewed all submitted material. We interviewed Mr. Dorsey. Based on the information available, management has decided to take corrective action." Alana waits. The words land too slow and too soft. She forces herself to breathe. Hale continues. "Mr. Dorsey will receive formal disciplinary documentation, mandatory retraining, loss of supervisory privileges for a defined period." She pauses. "Termination is not recommended at this time." Alana feels something sink inside her. Not surprise, just the cold weight of a system that never bends far. Hale keeps talking. "We can offer you a transfer to a different team and territory. Same pay, new supervisor, clean start." Alana stares at the table. The printed texts sit between them, quiet and harmless on the surface. The audio file waits on her phone. She thinks about the back lot, the dark, the fence. His voice telling her no one would believe her. She thinks about staying, about walking past him in hallways, about him watching her routes from a desk across the building. She knows what that will feel like. A door cracked open for retaliation, even if he never says a word out loud. The rep leans toward her. "It is your choice," he says, "no pressure either way." She closes her eyes for a moment. The decision is not clean. It never is. There is no ending where she walks out untouched, no ending where the system suddenly finds enough courage to match hers. She looks up. "I will take the transfer," she says. Hale nods. "We will process it today." Alana signs the paperwork with a steady hand. When she finishes, she sets the pen down and stands. The rep gives a small nod of approval. Hale thanks her again in a tone that feels too gentle for what the day has cost. Outside, the depot sounds different, not safer, not easier, just different. She walks through the main lot, past the cameras blinking under the daylight. Her van waits in a spot where everything is visible. She climbs in and sits there, still as stone. The engine ticks as it cools. A long minute passes before she starts the ignition. When she pulls out, she glances once toward the back lot, the place where the worst of it began and the place nothing was recorded. The fence stands in full daylight now. Nothing hidden, nothing obvious. Just a stretch of asphalt where the truth never had a witness. She drives away with the paperwork in her bag and the audio in her phone. The cost sits heavy but clear. She spoke, she was heard, and she will not stand in that dark corner again.